commence with our meeting. Today we're considering a report, annual report from the IGC. We want to welcome you, a lady and gentleman. You know, all this finance institutions, development finance institutions, they all come with one lady. It's more male voice plus one flower, I don't know. We have to understand what's going on. Anyway, we welcome you, and as usual, we hope that you're going to have a very good and energizing engagement. Yesterday we had quite a bad day, but I hope today you are going to energize us. Our interaction yesterday just demoralized us. But trusting that we always have that very good engagement with you, or interaction with you. Let's hear your report. Ariko, my goodness. We've considered the IDC's quarterly report. We are still going to also consider your 2010 second quarter report. We had your first quarter report. We're still going to consider your second quarter report. We did have your stretch plan for the year. We have an idea of where you're going for 2010, but we just want to find out just to what exactly were you doing in the previous year, and what the Auditor General says about you, and what's your plan going forward to deal with some of the challenges. Ariko, waiting for you. Can you then deal with item two for us?
Thank you, Chair. I've only received one apology, Chair, written apology from Honorable Holomisa, Chair.
And the others haven't apologized?
No, Chair, and then also Dr. Ravi indicated that he is just attending the Standing Committee on Appropriations this morning, but he'll join us at 10 o'clock as well.
Thank you. Those are the apologies. May we then hand over to the IDC?
Chair, thank you.
I'm told Mr. Van Zyl will be leading the... Oh, Mr. Mir, yes, will be leading the delegation, yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. This is correction. Before I do that, I just want to apologize on behalf of the CEO. He's joined the president on the trip to Egypt. Apologies for that. So I can just introduce the team.
I guess it's an omission on my side. We did hear that he'll be joining the president. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to introduce the team and myself, I'm Gerrit van Wyk. I'm the Chief Risk Officer at IDC. I'll do the financial part of the presentation. Shakil is the Executive Responsible for Industrial Sectors. He'll do the first part, the overview of the activities, and then Christophe van Zyl. He's in one of our managers in the Strategy Department. He'll conclude the presentation on the performance of the year, and then level Modibase, the managing officers of the CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As we know, IDC's key role is the development of industrial sectors and development of industrial capacity in South Africa. Now, with the implementation of the new growth path, the focus in the country is increasingly on industrial development, and that's largely encapsulated in the Industrial Policy Action Plan. So as IDC, we increasingly seeing our key role to make sure that we drive and make sure that the Industrial Policy Action Plan elements get executed. We've started, as you're aware, reporting to the Economic Development Department, and what we believe is that because the department plays a coordinating role in terms of policy, it should make it easier for us to implement policy and support the context for us to achieve our long-term developmental goals. And we are also hoping that the Economic Development Department can assist us in removing some of the barriers that we experience in the implementation of specific projects. To start off with the environment that we've been operating under in the last year, obviously it was a period of recession, and the beginning of the financial year was when it really started hitting us as a country, which meant there was lower local consumer demand, but also what substantially impacted the companies that we fund is a drop in the demand for exports as companies around the world slowed down. In some sectors during the course of the year, and that's in particular commodities, we started seeing some recovery in prices because areas like China weren't as badly hit by the recession as the developed world. But that was coming from a very low base, and it was unique to specific sectors. So what we saw overall, a number of companies coming under a lot of strain as the demand for their products dropped. Some of the companies which we had previously approved funding for actually cancelled some of the expansion plans or put them as hold because of the uncertainty going forward in terms of when the economy would turn around. Internally, these things had consequences on us, because, as you know, IDC takes a relatively high risk profile in the clients it funds. So the way our clients were disproportionately impacted by the economic crisis, and we had to spend increasing amounts of time assisting the companies that were already our clients to survive and actually turn around. Some of the things that we had previously approved, we had to cancel or we had to delay the payments. And although the number of business plans we received, in fact, they picked up quite substantially, but the quality of them dropped a lot. And there were a lot of them, because of the uncertainty of the environment, it was very difficult to establish markets. The stress funding, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, the rate at which we disbursed funds or approved funds was lower than we had originally expected, because companies with the uncertainties didn't want to increase the debt burden. Having said that about the recession, we took a conscious decision that we will not behave the way some of the banks have locally and internationally, and we would not cut down in our activities. And if you look in terms of our funding approvals, we've continued the growing trend. Last year was slightly higher, but what we've achieved, in fact, is the second highest level of approvals in IDC's history, at over 9 billion rand. We expect to create and save about 25,000 jobs through our activities in the last financial year. One significant change in that respect has been the number of new jobs that we expect to create have dropped, but that's to a large extent been replaced by companies which we assisted to save their jobs. One of the focus areas that we have discussed previously at the committee is the focus for the country of green industries. And we started gaining momentum in this last financial year by participating in the early stages of development of a number of these projects, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as well later. I touched on the Industrial Policy Action Plan. If we are going to play the role that I mentioned earlier in terms of a key implementer, we need to make sure that our strategy is fully aligned with it, that we are targeting the right sectors, that we are targeting the right projects, that we are developing the value chains to support the action plan. In order to try and make sure that we provide funding as cheaply as possible to our clients, and also in the context of the economic crisis where liquidity around the world had tightened up and some of our traditional sources of funding were becoming more difficult to access, we started looking for new areas to access funds, and one significant area was a partnership with the Unemployment Insurance Fund, where we've managed to borrow money from them to on-lend to our clients, and that's targeted specifically at companies that create or save jobs at an efficient rate. In terms of the green economy, It has been identified as potentially a major driver of creating jobs going forward, as well as making us a lot more of an environmentally friendly country. As a country, we've got one of the highest per capita emissions of carbon, but the IDC has taken a lead in conferences like the Copenhagen conference, and we need to see that we make the right moves so that we create this better environment and in the process take advantage of this growing industry and create jobs nationally as well. We've taken a holistic approach, so we're looking at things like alternative energy. In particular, we're focusing on wind and solar power. Besides the generation side, we're also looking at the demand side, where we're looking at energy management, cogeneration, energy efficiency. Out of the energy side, we're looking at resource management, which includes things like recycling. I mentioned job creation. Some of these things like generation by wind and solar actually create very few jobs. If we want to really make an impact in terms of job creation, we have to see that we manufacture as much as possible of the components within South Africa. And that's been one of the key focuses that we have been taking. I'm not going to talk through everything on this slide. You'll have got copies of this. But this is just to give you a feel of some of the things that we are working on, the range. We've got things ranging from pre-feasibility up to feasibility stage, and some things we've actually approved a final investment. Some of these things will take a number of years to roll out. For example, some of the wind projects, we're doing wind testing and so on. We're looking at, as I mentioned, solar, wind, to highlight some of the interesting things on the list. We're doing, in terms of solar, we're looking at both photovoltaic and concentrated solar. We're looking at converting biomass to energy. We've funded plans to actually make pellets for exports to Europe. Some of the things we're looking at going forward are things like smart metering, retrofitting of buildings. In terms of venture capital, we're trying to introduce new technologies. E-waste, we're looking at a potential project to recycle things like energy efficient bulbs. There's the electric car, which we are co-funding to try and bring it to a commercial stage. It's still under development. We've looked at recycling of steel. We're looking at a project to try to see if we can clean up mine water wastage. So there's quite a range of things which we are looking at and that are in our pipeline as well. Obviously, all of these won't come through to final approval, but we're continuously working to find new opportunities as well. In particular, in the manufacturing industry, and which is one of our key focuses, one of the key elements of IPAP is that government is planning a substantial investment in capital in the next few years. And as a country, we need to take advantage of that by manufacturing as much as possible locally rather than importing, both for balance of payments and for job creation purposes. The two main areas of investment are Eskom and in rail, which includes Transnet and Prasa. And we are looking at funding not them directly, but to their suppliers to help them build up capacity. And just to give two examples, there's a business which upgrades commuter rail coaches. We help them to set up an operation in KwaZulu-Natal. It's a black woman-owned business which will create over 160 jobs. In terms of energy, there's a company that we've supported that manufactures ducting, and we help them to build capacity to supply for the Medupi power station, which would create over 200 jobs. In terms of forestry, wood is going to become increasingly a scarce resource, and we need to make sure that there is a stable supply of timber, especially once construction picks up. The other reason this sector is important is because it's obviously in rural areas, and its potential to have an impact in these regions is quite important. I think the committee is very well aware of the next point. The company which we did support in the last financial year, which is a forestry and sawmilling company in Mpumalanga, And maybe let me take the opportunity to mention now that this company has in fact started turning around. They've started rehiring some of the people they retrenched. And in fact, they've already had success through the training layoff scheme and reskilling, where some of the people who have been retrenched, they assisted to set up new businesses in terms of manufacturing furniture. And some of those are starting to become sustainable. We also assisted a retailer, which is a significant retailer in the South African market, to actually move backward integrate and start manufacturing some of their own furniture locally. And that is expected to create over 200 new jobs. In the automotive sector, in line with the APDP which has been introduced, IDC's focus is expected to be increasingly on building the component sector. And that would in fact underpin the motor vehicle assembly sector, which both for local and export markets. But in the last financial year, a lot of our activity in this sector was assisting companies in distress. We know the demand for motor vehicles has dropped substantially in the last year, and that meant the component manufacturers were put under extreme pressure as their orders dropped off, and we assisted some of them to survive through this difficult period. We approved funding of about 380 million rand, and that's expected to create to save about 1,500 jobs. The textile sector is an area that has been under pressure for a long period, but the pressure was worsened by the recession. So on the one hand, we took a short-term approach similar to some of the other sectors, looking at trying to support some of the specific companies in distress to try and reduce the job losses. But we also took a long-term view. And our view was that we need to support companies to increase their competitiveness. This is companies which are in niches where they can compete successfully. And we've provided funding substantially to companies to improve their competitiveness in the region of about 300 million rand. And through that process, we saved and created over 2,000 jobs in this sector. And this sector, in fact, if you look at the numbers of jobs relative to approvals, it's one of the more efficient areas in terms of utilization of money to create jobs. If you look at what we've done in rural areas, we've made a number of investments in different sectors. But two of the sectors where the largest investments tend to be in rural areas and the agro industries and in the minerals and beneficiation sectors. And examples of that is we provided funding for entrepreneurs to put money into a business for its expansion for abalone farming in the Western Cape. We also supported a citrus project with shareholding by local communities. That is in the Northern Cape area. It's expected to create over 1,300 jobs. And we invested about 200 million rand for that. In terms of mining and beneficiation, a substantial investment that we made in the last financial year was in the manganese ore mine. And what's particularly significant about it is that we wanted to make sure that there is local beneficiation. And we're looking at a sinter complex and a ferromanganese alloy production facility. And these developments would happen both in Northern Cape and in Kuha, so there would be impact on both those regions. And that's creating almost 1,000 direct jobs as well as indirect and construction jobs. One of the most significant areas of this investment is the impact it's going to have on foreign exchange in the region of about 10 billion rand per annum. To briefly talk about some of the other sectors where we've had some impact, and we're not going to try and go through everything that we've done. We know that malaria is a major challenge on our continent. We've been working together with the World Health Organization and the South African Department of Health to try and find solutions, to try and work with industry, to try and find ways to reduce the negative impacts of malaria. I touched earlier on the Township and Rural Hospital Scheme. In the last financial year, we funded an additional 2 hospitals, and those are specifically targeted at regions which aren't necessarily well serviced by the government sector, but also the private sector is reluctant to invest because there aren't sufficient economies of scale. We have been, in the last few years, trying to develop a film industry in South Africa. What we initiated in the last financial year is a program to say, let's work together with the National Film and Video Foundation, the DTI, and the SABC, and create a stream of low-budget local films, targeted mainly at local markets, and help to create a vibrant industry. In the logistics sector, we continued supporting small operators of trucks, and that's being done in partnership with the commercial banking sector. We've also made an investment in the aviation sector in terms of transport in the rest of Africa. During the recession, as I mentioned, because we recognize we have a counter-cyclical role, we tried to continue to provide funding, and we approved funding over 9 billion rand, despite the recession, and that was the second highest level of funding that we have ever approved in our history. In terms of the distress funding, that was below our expectations. In total, over the period of the recession, which hasn't run out yet, we did allocate about 6 billion rand. In the last financial year, we only approved 1.4 billion rand. We were fairly unsure about the level of demand, but we were hoping that it would be more than that. When you all did come up to visit us in Johannesburg, we indicated that we have started a program to increase awareness, and I just want to mention now that we have had a number of workshops, we've communicated through the media, and currently that figure has gone up to about 3 billion rand. So we're starting to see a bit more of a flow of funds. In terms of the clothing and textiles, I touched on this earlier, but we did our competitiveness scheme has been effective. There's been a lot of activity in that sector from IDC. We funded a large number of companies to upgrade their systems, to improve their processes and equipment. I've mentioned the next point in terms of sourcing funds from the UIF, and we did agree with the UIF that those funds could be used for companies which were under distress as well, provided the jobs saved were being done at an efficient rate. Besides the companies that we funded as part of the distress funding, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of our existing clients were put under pressure. So we spent a lot of time in the last financial year assisting those companies in terms of helping them to restructure, in terms of restructuring their facilities, converting debt to equity, delaying payments, capitalizing interest, assisting them with coming up with new plans to help make sure that they survive through this period. And you'll see some of what I'm talking about, the impact on our clients in the financial presentation as well. If you look at overall, in summary, the type of activities we've had, our main focus, as you're aware, is South African startups and expansions, and that remained in the last financial year the majority of our activity. About a quarter of our investments were in the rest of the African continent, and that was particularly focused around infrastructure, agriculture, and some areas of manufacturing, something which obviously is different from previous years. 15% of our funding went specifically to distressed companies as a result of the economic crisis. If you look by sector, by value, by far most of our money went into mining. But if you look by number, there's a lot better spread. And the main reason for that significant higher share of value is that the mining investments tend to be larger, and in particular the one that I highlighted earlier in the presentation was a substantial investment that we made. If you look in terms of the regional split, traditionally, most of our investments have tended to be in the areas of Gauteng, Western Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal, and that's something that we've always seen as a challenge, and we've tried to move away from that. And substantially, unless if you look in Gauteng by number, where there's been a large number, But if you look by value, we've had a fairly good spread, a better spread across the different provinces in the last financial year. One area which has remained a challenge is the Free State. There are three case studies which we've presented here, and I'm not going to talk through them. I'll just mention one or two points about them, but you have got them in the copies of the presentation. But to give an example of something in the green arena that we did, there's an existing citrus operation which has been using coal in their boilers, which is not carbon friendly. The coal is not a renewable resource. We engaged with them to replace their furnaces with something which is not only more efficient, but also enables them to use the peels to dry them and use those as fuel. And in addition, by going that route, they can actually qualify for carbon credits, and that's an additional source of income. And we're using some of that carbon credits to actually support the local communities. So it's these sorts of areas where we need to start being more and more inventive as a country, finding new opportunities, new industries, new markets, new technologies, that we can promote green as well as become more competitive. We've been becoming increasingly active in venture capital. One of the things that we have supported is a company which has a new technology in terms of planting pits. It's capable of planting between 2,000 and 3,000 seeds per day. It's something that's still being tested. It's still at the prototype stage. But we are hoping that if this becomes a success, it will have an impact not only on the forestry industry, but also within the company in terms of creating a new technology, local manufacture, possibilities of exports, and so on. To give an example of what I mentioned, we've supported some healthcare. We funded a clinic in Cosmos City. The focus through this type of funding is black-owned. We want to support new independent competitors in the health sector, and in particular those that are going to target the lower-income and previously disadvantaged communities. Thank you. I'll hand over to Helen to talk about our financial.
Chair, thank you. I will do the financials. If I can just start by explaining the way I'm going to present it, is on the left, the block on the left is the mini group of IDC, and in the mini group of IDC we have the financing subsidiaries, then on the right hand side some other subsidiaries, and these ones are where we have sharing more than 50%, and then we also account for some associates. And I've just put some examples of the associates on the screen. So I will refer to the group, then I include everything where we have to consolidate. And when I refer to the mini group, it's only the IDC and its financing subsidiaries on the left-hand side, which the presentation will concentrate on more on the mini group. But I'm starting off with the...
I hope that you're going to be explaining this mini group. Financing subsidiaries and other subsidiaries and associates as you continue. So before you even continue, so that we have a clear understanding of what you're talking about.
I think I should do that first.
Yes.
Okay. So the one, if I can talk to the financing subsidiaries of IDC, there you see Fundevco, Infofund, Kindorp, Condel, and Conol. If I could just start from the top, Fundevco was established many years ago, and we're phasing it out. It was established for our loan book, and since then, probably about 10-15 years ago, the SARS decided that we do not need an additional financing subsidiary to separate our loan book and our equity book. So what we're doing currently, we're phasing that one out. Impofin is all our import finance facilities, which we facilitate. Kindok is mainly our Sandton property, the one, the building of where we are currently in Sandton. Conbel is a very old subsidiary that there are almost no value in it, but we have to keep it here because it's about 1 million or 2 million in that subsidiary. but we have to report on it because it's still...
Which one is that?
That's Conbel, the second last one. And then our Sasol investment we made in the 50s.
Sorry about that. Can I... we are a bit slow.
Sorry.
I'm a bit slow.
I apologize.
You're saying Conbel is what?
It's a financial subsidiary that was formed many years ago, and it also housed some of our investments. But there was no reason, also this is also a tax issue, that we don't need to keep it in a separate vehicle. We are consolidating it now into the financial books of the IEC. But we're also phasing, it's actually dormant, we're also phasing
so
Conbel out.
It's dormant at the moment, but to be phased out.
To be phased out.
Right.
And then the last one, Chair, is Con Oil, and that's the one where we house since, when was it, in the 50s, we housed our share in Sasol through Con Oil. That's specifically set up for that purpose. It is also dormant, but our share in Sasol is still alive, so we have to keep it separate.
Maybe on the Conbel, you mentioned that Conbel is going to be in the what is the nature of that investment?
I just need to check for you in the financial statements. I'll come back to you just now.
Yeah, that's why I said you needed to go deeper into that because, you know, we're getting this for the first time as a committee. And therefore, we must have a deeper, a clear understanding of what you're talking about.
Okay. See, then on the right-hand side, we have two other categories. We call it the other subsidiaries. Now, the other subsidiaries is the one where Fosco is out, and we still have over 80%, although we have now finalized the BEE transaction in Fosco, which we will then end up with 59%. But currently we consolidated in, and that is what we call other subsidiaries, and that is where we have shareholdings of more than 50%. Then associates, okay, those are the ones that where we have shareholding between 25% and 50%. And the examples we gave you is Mozal, Intuala, Hewlett, and then Savannah, and then a lot of other smaller ones, which we just group under other associates. Can I proceed?
Okay.
So when I unpack in the...
Just a second. You're saying associates are subsidiaries where you have more than 25%?
Between 25 and 50%.
Between 25 and 50%. So that 24%?
Is it 24% IEC shareholding in Mozal? Mozal big aluminium smelter. So it's between 25 and 50. We have to report on an account for the 25.4% in our consolidated numbers.
Okay.
So our shareholding, IEC shareholding, in Mozal.
Okay.
The same with the 24%, 30%, and 29%. And in the financial statements here, there's also a number of others. We just, for the purposes of the presentation, we didn't list all of them. See, if you can just refer to it for more detail on page 162. All the financial statements, we have a full list of the associate companies where I just highlighted the bigger ones. See, if I then can start with the income statement of the group, that is now the consolidated picture of the subsidiaries and the associates, where we have to consolidate through our shareholding the big picture of IEC. And that is then the first presentation I make post the structure that I refer to. And here, the main change is the drop in revenue from last year of 48% of almost 15 billion rand to 7 billion, mainly due to the weak performance of Fosco. Because remember, we're consolidating everybody in this group structure of the balance sheet. And that then meant that our net income dropped from 6.4 billion to 2 billion in the past year. If I then unpack, Chairman, the sources of income of the balance sheet or the income statement that which I presented previously, that's the next slide. So then you'll see in the last year or the year we reported in 2010. Here we differentiate between the dividends we received through our equity investments the interest through our loans, and then also the income from our preference shares, and then other is very much our fees we earn it. Whether it's rising fees, legal fees, guarantee fees. And the main source of income last year, the year we're reporting on, remained still our dividends on 1.9 billion, mainly from Kumba, our shareholding in Kumba, and also our shareholding in Sasol. The 5.3 billion dividend income that we've received in the previous year was mainly due to a dividend of over a billion from Foscor, and we also received from Mozal, the Mozambique aluminium smelter, some nice dividends in the previous year, which did not happen in 2010, the year we're reporting on. And then over 770 million from interest, our loan book, 700 million preference share income in 2010, and then the fees, 325 million. That's just an analysis of the income I referred to on the mini group. So my next slide is on the expenses of IDC, the administrative expenses. Again, the mini group. Here, our cost to income ratio, that is the red line on the slide, increased from 14% to almost 30% in the past financial year, mainly due to the lower income, which I referred to in my previous two slides. With staff cost remaining more or less constant around 500 million, 506 million in 2009, and 418 million in the financial year 2010, and then with other costs at 440 million. Those other costs mainly refer to your marketing costs, your IT, the travel cost in the other than your staff costs. See, if I go to the next slide, it's quite an important analysis we would do at IDC, and that is our impairments in the corporation. Here, our impairments, we express it as a percentage of cost, that is your blue bar, and we also express it as a percentage of at market value. Market value, if we take all our listed and equity investments and we fair value them. But that cost is at the amount that when we, the value of the approval, at when we did the approval, that is when we do the cost. So here we see that at cost impairments increased from 10-12% in 2007-08 to 16% in the year 2010. Very much in line of the high risk of the transactions and the earlier stage investments we're making in IDC. At market value, it remained constant around about the 4.8-4.9% at market value. Then if I conclude then on the part of the income statement before I go to the balance sheet of the IDC, if I analyze then the net profit of the IDC, then the last year in 2010, operating profit was 1.4 billion and capital gains, that is where we sell shares, whether it's listed or unlisted, where we realize our equity investments, was 573 million rand. But operating side, the income was 1.4 million, quite sharply down from the 3.94 billion in 2009, mainly due also to the profits at POSCO. So that is the income statement side of IDC. If I can just then move on to the balance sheet, again of the group. Under assets, the major change here, Chair, is the growth in our investments from 53 billion under assets to 68 billion. And then on the reserves from 63 billion to 77 billion rand. Mainly also due to a change or a favorable change in the market value or fair value of our investments or our equity investments in IDC. See if I can just then unpack a little bit more the items on the balance sheet.
Not a point of clarification on the secretary of the verb and the English verb. 62
to 37. Sorry, I apologize. Chair, the main increase in the from 63 to 77 is on the equity side is the one that with the increase in the market value of our portfolio. So if you remember the previous year there was quite a drop in the market value of the listed shares, and last year it was much higher than the previous year. And also in the results is the accumulated profits. But yeah, I will unpack the items as I go along. So if I look in the first category in the balance sheet is the total assets on the next slide. Here we've unpacked loans and advances, more or less the same at 9.7 billion compared to 9 billion the previous year. This is at cost. Then our investments at cost, and here the definition of our investments is our equity investments at cost, is about 18 billion. And then here you can see quite an increase in the value of our investments, the revaluation of our investments, up from 48 to 60 billion. So total assets, almost 90 billion last financial year. And once again, main reason, the increase or the revaluation of the investments at fair value. See if I go further onto the balance sheet. And just unpack a little bit the growth in our investments, which I referred to. Then we do it through the unlisted book and the listed book. Our main unlisted investments in 2010 at market value, just want to re-emphasize that. At fair value, the main ones is our unlisted investments is Exxaro at 5.8 billion, Mozal, that is now in Mozambique, at 4.6 billion, then Foscore. If you remember, I referred to the drop in the revenue of Foscore, and that also then went through the asset side of Foscore, and the Foscore revaluation dropped from 8.2 billion the previous year to 2 or 3 billion last year. And then we have Impala at 2 billion, and then also a lot of other, we just grouped it together, all other investments at 11 billion. But this is just an idea of the unlisted book or the growth that I referred to on the balance sheet. Okay, the next slide is the listed portion of the book of IDC, again at market value. Here the big contributors is Sasol on 16 billion, our investment in Kumba, 14 billion, BHP, 8.5 billion, and then Mittal, ExxonMittal, and then also a lot of other listed smaller investments, total of 4.4 billion. Just to give the committee an idea of the growth or that happened from the 09 financial year to the 2010 financial year. Chair, then to summarize the balance sheet of IDC, we looked then at, we call it the capital base of the corporation, how strong the balance sheet of IDC. Then the red line is our debt-equity ratio currently at 4%, or the end of the 2010 financial year at 4%, coming down from 8% during the years 08-09. And then our base of our net asset value of the IDC at almost 80 billion rand in 2010. Once again, the increase from 2010, the member referred to in his question, mainly due to the increase in the revaluation of our assets. So that concludes the financial part. I also would like to touch on one slide or two slides on the audit that you referred to, Chair. If I can start then with the audit within the corporation, we have a board audit committee, which is a subcommittee of the board, with specific objectives, amongst others, to ensure that we comply with IFRS and the Companies Act, making sure also that the financial controls and reporting is adequate. The composition currently of the board audit committee, all the board, we have four non-executive directors, but also,
two independent non-executive committee members, external to the board, the CEO. The board audit committee is chaired by an independent non-executive director as prescribed by King III. And we also have then, for observer status, the chief financial officer, myself, head internal audit, head IT, that are invitees to the board audit committee. Other than the board audit committee, IEC also have an independent internal audit function where the chairman reports directly to the board audit committee. They're following a risk trace. So what we will do enterprise-wide risk management of the IEC, and then the audit department will use that in their audit approach. We have quite a strong forensic capacity within the internal audit department. They also review the IT systems, all the other systems procedures, and they also do from time to time, I refer to all these investee companies we have shares in, we also do governance audits on these investee companies through the internal audit function. So then to conclude my presentation, just summarize the report of the external auditors. We have received once again a clean report from the auditors. Some specific references in the report. The external auditors picked up some statements which was mainly or were mainly as a result of difference of interpretation between management and the auditors, and that were resolved. And also they did not find any control deficiencies during the financial or the reporting year. The second issue that was in the external auditor's report with the compliance with the PFMA. And Chair, as you mentioned last year, we have been given exemptions for under the EU Section 92 and 51 and 54 until October 2011. And those ones simply refer to where we're making investments. We have to report it to National Treasury. And they've exempted us from that. We're only from October 2011 again. We probably have to reapply for exemption. Currently, we have been exempted until October 2011. Under internal control, Chairman received also a clean sheet. What they do, they look at the fundamentals of internal control, whether it's under leadership, performance management, or your record keeping, governance. In all those cases, we have achieved the required levels of governance. The last two bullets, Chair, there were smaller findings that related to our IT, some IT issues, and we've put some examples there. The ones that I referred to more were about the user accounts or the system patches or the strength, you know, the passwords in the IDC. And then there were also some, to conclude my part, a number of non-material administrative matters that we need to put to the attention of the committee, which mainly refer to the way we account for the jobs and also documenting the system we had within IDC. They did find that we could strengthen the way that we document our correspondence within IDC. Chair, that concludes the financial part. Krista would like just to do the performance part, our last part of the presentation.
The next two slides are really reflect how we've done against the performance indicators that we've agreed with the shareholders. And I'm going to go through this fairly quickly in the interest of time. The most important indicator in IDC short-term target was to create a certain number of jobs. We had to create and save a certain number of jobs. We had a target there of just under 38,000 when we our activities through the year, our new approvals, and after taking into account cancellations of transactions that was approved in previous years, which really impacted us as negatively in the previous year, we achieved 19,300 jobs. So we did not achieve that target. The big reasons why we did not achieve that target, two. One was the lower than expected uptake of the distress funding, and the second one was the higher level of cancellations of previous transactions because of the economic conditions. Funding approvals for SMEs, target to approve 145, achieved 124. Value of approvals to the rest of the continent, that we overachieved on that target. We had expected to invest in the rest of the continent to the tune of 1.8 billion. We have approved transactions of 2.4 billion. And the rest of the continent remains important for the IDC as we see it as an engine for growth for our country to move into the markets to the north. Disbursement of funds, another area we spoke earlier about projects being delayed, projects being cancelled. At the start of the year, we expected to disburse funding of around about 5.3 billion. Because of projects being delayed, cancelled, we managed to disburse funding of 4.8 billion. On the financial indicators, we looked at dividend income, our gross interest margin, impairments, and operating expenses. The first one, the dividend income from unlisted investments specifically. We do not look at our dividend income from listed investments as we've got very little control over that. We targeted 530 million, mostly as a result of four scores. Lower than expected performance and no dividends coming from Fourscore, we achieved 320 million. On our gross interest margin, we had a target there of 1.8%. We've achieved a margin of 2.3%. And here, the reason for that indicator is really to ensure that IDC tries and lower its cost of borrowing over the long term. On impairments, and this is specifically the impact on the income statement, we had a target to limit that to 1.27 billion. Impairments was lower than what we budgeted for, and we achieved 1.2 billion. Operating expenses also below what we budgeted for, so we overachieved on that. And then the last indicator on the short-term target, looking at customer satisfaction index, where we had a slight decline on the customer satisfaction index, and that's one of the reasons why to improve our turnaround times is to improve our customer satisfaction. On our long-term targets, the actual job creation is another area where the recession impacted IDC. As we mentioned earlier as well, quite a few of our clients had run into difficulties. The expansion plans that they had was delayed. So a number of the jobs that we expected to be created was not created. We also had to intervene in some cases to assist companies through the state funding, meaning that they tried to contain their costs and as such the new appointments were not made. We developed the strategies for the implementation of IPAC 2 as we set up at the start of the year. In terms of our long-term financial sustainability, we need to look at the growth in our unlisted investments, a target there of 12.3%. We achieved 11% over the past 3 years, which is slightly below the target, and that was mainly as a result of the drop in valuations in the previous year. Our profitability, including capital growth, achieved 17% return versus 10.4% target. Our impairments on our balance sheet, Mr. von Weck showed the graphs earlier, it's still below the limits that we have on our impairments. The target we had was 17.3%. We managed to keep our impairments below that at 16.3%. And then staff turnover slightly above target with 10% versus 9%. And then our stakeholder perception survey also we achieved an index value of 50.7 versus 51.7. Slightly below what we had targeted, but still significantly higher than what we've achieved in previous years when we did the survey. Just some of the most prospects for the upcoming year, and we've spoken to this in a lot more detail in our previous presentation to the committee. Implementation of IFAP 2 and the new growth path remains the most important strategic priorities for the IDC. What we've, in terms of the feedback that we're getting from our clients, from our shareholders, from other stakeholders, we are really continuously working on improving our turnaround times on all aspects of the IDC's operations. The biggest challenge for us is to increase our impact in job creation in the country, and then also specific regional interventions to address poverty in certain rural areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Mr. Van Bale on the governance issues, Mr. Van Bale on the financial, and Mr. Mir on the general issues. Okay, colleagues, here's the presentation before us. Can we take to this? Before we do so, let me welcome Mr. Mabasa, who hasn't been with us for a long time due to ill health. You're welcome back, Mr. Sir. All right. And we're happy that you are well and kicking.
Actually, Bafana is waiting for
you. Oh, that's good. That's good news. Thank you very much, Mr. Marais and Mr. Ntuli. Can you indicate by show of hands, please, if you want to, if you're interested in talking to Dr. Huang, the Ngonyama, in that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. Really, it's a very comprehensive presentation. It's a very good presentation. And it's quite pleasing to see this after my experience of yesterday. Just from the beginning, I just want to find out where you mentioned about the operating environment. I think you've also mentioned it there, and that we are very much aware that South Africa has more become a commodity export country than a value-added export country. And it's to do with international competitiveness. Now, this is a huge challenge, I think, for South Africa. How do we become more competitive? And I would very much like, because of your investment and absolute central position in stimulating manufacturing and industrial development, and obviously also to enhance our competitiveness, global competitiveness, how do you see we must increase our competitiveness and very specifically our productivity? Because I mean, we cannot decrease wages. We cannot, you know, it's very difficult to increase competitiveness from a cost point of view. But the one thing that stands out, and there is a huge difference between us and global competitive markets, are productivity. How do you see, from your point and from your investors' point, how can that be improved? The second one, Madam Chair, that has been mentioned about is that you intend to work in partnership with the UIF to get lower cost money. The one thing that I've picked up from other agencies or divisions from the department are reporting to us is that everybody goes to the UIF for money. All the finance institutions that we have seen has mentioned UIF money. And is there really a sustainability of getting funding from the UIF for everybody? Or how do you see this going forward? Because surely, you know, there's a huge uptake maybe in the beginning with the UIF, but is this a sustainable source of funding? Then, Madam Chair, you've mentioned about our objectives into the greener economy. Now, we know that you have an involvement with the dual, and I know to a large extent that is development money going in there, but I think that project is now in a phase where it must either be culled or there must be a huge, huge, huge investment to really bring that product to a level where it can be manufactured in a competitive light. How do you see going forward there, and are you really convinced that in the current global market that is a good investment from the IDC's point of view? Madam Chair, just on the green economy, which is critically important, I'm of the view that one cannot only look at the direct cost, but obviously also the opportunity cost, you know, going in there and saving, you know, the industry and the globe and everything. But the IDC has mentioned in the past that you are not in favor of financing biofuel projects where maize is involved. We have lately heard from the Minister of Agriculture that it seems like that, from their point of view, there must be a rethink. Also, the reports that we have seen that a minority of maize at the moment is used for, if I can call it, human food. The majority is used for animal food or for exports. Have you still got the same position on that? On maize for biofuels, or, you know, is there a new way of thinking to that? Then while I mentioned about the automotives and the dual, you've mentioned that your focus is to a large extent on component manufacturers, obviously to increase the local content. What we have experienced with component manufacturers, and I think it has been mentioned to you in the past, is that many of the component manufacturers import their raw material. It gets used in a plastic molding machine here, and then it's been seen as 100% local content. So very little downstream beneficiation going on there. Have you looked at that, and what is your view on that? How can you then ensure with your policy that really downstream beneficiation takes place, and not just as a component manufacturer importing its raw material? Madam Chair, I'll stop there and, you know, look at Madam Chair, just one more that I thought that is very, very important. You mentioned about Kucha and the very important role of Kucha in further mineral and beneficiation going on. When one looks at Kucha as an industrial development zone, that is probably can be seen as a white elephant at the moment. Fantastic facilities, fantastic infrastructure, enormously underutilized. So it must be an incredible bad investment at the moment. What is IDC's view on industrial development zones and the effective development and utilizing of IDZs, you know, in support of our manufacturing and specifically our export drives? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Madam. Thank you. Thanks, Chaperson. If we take, let's say, the example of the state of the nation address, I mean, the previous year where the president was talking about 500,000 jobs to be created, if we take that example, what was your target, your share of the whole number of jobs to be created by our economy? If you can take us through what was your target from that share. Secondly, if we of the number of billions allocated to spend on distressed companies, how much of it has been spent so far? And then how many companies have been supported, and in what sectors of the economy do they belong? With the aim to rescue these companies, how many jobs have been saved or created? And at what interest rate when you lend to these companies supported, what interest rate? And do you have a mechanism in place to ensure that you are not funding the individuals, but there are many people, in these companies? Do we have any mechanism to ensure that? Because usually, I remember when we were visiting the other at Atlantis, where we were suspecting that, you know, seemingly it's the owners of the company, not everybody was benefiting. Or what mechanism are in place to ensure that these funds are sustainable, particularly to grow the business? That's Jefferson.
Thank you, Sanjula. Your turn.
Thank you, Jefferson. Firstly, I wonder, little complaint for the IDC presentation is copy. Yeah, it's the picture is very small, it's writing. We can't see the inside. I don't know, you try want to make a little strategy later, we can show the card, but don't make more questions or not. Because it's very difficult and can read in the inside. So I can't get my heart and my mind go looking at this detail. So I
think ARICOM must improve on that, because they send an electronic copy and then he then makes this. Maybe he needs to continue doing what he was doing before.
Okay,
put the whole slide for each page.
Yeah, because don't save me this money. This one is IDC got a lot of money. Don't save
money.
Yeah.
It's our money.
For the committee, damage our eyes.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. I think regarding this, after my colleague asking this jury, this investment by IDC, this electrical car. I think it's my follow-up is, do IDC know this car is which year it will start in the marketing? Then what price they will be sold, the selling price? Then do you think they can competition with the overseas from Japan, from China, same with the electrical car? Because IDC, from your financial annual report, you already injection other 56 million rand. You approved. So total, you already injection how much in this new business. So I want to know this crisis. Do you have this, because you have the crisis, this management. Chairperson, I also like to know from the IDC annual report, I can't find the AG report, Auditor General report. So it means IDC don't need for Auditor General report. You only got the independent auditor report. So all the this entity from the government entity, I just supposed to see the with the IDC haven't got the Auditor General report. It's very important. I just want to confirm. They don't need audit. They didn't give this process to the AG. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Long. Mr. William.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think let me join my colleagues in commending the IDC on its comprehensive report. I can definitely assure Dr. Huang, even myself with my two big eyes, things have actually been quite difficult to see. But be that as it may, the issue is the question of jobs. It's the target is 38,000, and we've managed to get 19,000, if I'm correct, Mr. Francis. This is a very critical element, and because it goes with the mandate of IDC to assist in the job creation. You've managed to get 50%, in other words, 19 out of 38. Is there any plan? We have to be taken through a plan of how to improve on this issue, especially at this time in South Africa where we have serious unemployment. I must also say on slide 15 that it does appear that there's been improvement with regard to provision of funding, as it is actually indicated in the slide. And the second biggest, as it was said, 9.4 billion. But unfortunately, it doesn't tally with the jobs created. That's the contradiction in my mind. We've provided more funds, but insofar as jobs creation, and we have actually gone very low. And the other one is the question of slide 17 on the provinces. Free State. Free State is one of the poorest provinces in the country. Free State is one of the poorest provinces in the country. We're having funding approvals, and they're very, very, very low in that province. I'm not sure whether is there any plan that you can actually take us through that will give assurance on that kind of situation. It's not only Free State. Mpumalanga is the same, as well as Northwest, more or less. The other one is the question of we are, as IDC, part of the equity holders of ArcelorMittal. But insofar as the question of the component, automobile component manufacturing, it's part of our plan, and that impacts on steel prices. I'm not sure if you can actually tell us about your role insofar as the steel price, ArcelorMittal, as well as ensuring at the same time that we have this manufacturing of the automobile component parts improving. Because the reason why in South Africa we are importing automobile components is because of the price of steel. And yet we are the shareholders of ArcelorMittal. The other one, staff costs, I think it was slide 26. It seems, Madam Chair, that staff costs have reduced. And I'm sure we're supposed to celebrate that, but can we be given reasons why? The other one is the slide that was, I think it's at the beginning, it was talking about the recovery on the commodity and is driven by China. Which of the commodities are we referring to? We have identified a number of projects that were involved in, including the green ones. But I don't see any project on water, water management. South Africa is going to experience serious problems of, and a crisis in water management. I thought, Madam Chair, I must really raise this issue of water because there's a young fellow in my house who's very much clued on the subject. He's abroad and he keeps on phoning me that Dad, we're going to have and the water problem and crisis in South Africa. And he's specializing in water management. He's in London and he said, we need to profile this issue. I'm advocating and his statement. But the last one is again on Kuga. I want to agree with that. Mr. Murray, if you drive to Port Elizabeth and you look at that white elephant, it is perturbing. Many projects were approved to actually take place there, but some of them have been diverted to other areas. There was supposed to be a refinery that is supposed to take place. There's a very big debate about that refinery even now, that it must go to another province. I'm not very sure what is the plan. At the beginning of Kuga, I happened to have been, and the MEC at the time in the Eastern Cape that started that project, and the IDC was at the center of it. It was driving. I'm not sure now what is the situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanyama. Memso Tetsi, welcome, Dr. Ravi. You're next, Dr. Memso Tetsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. During the term of recession, our main focus was to ensure that the companies had been funded to the source. But we didn't get into the details of how does IDC hold them accountable. And those who are honoring the conditions of the funding, how consistent are they? And step 10, on women-owned business that is to be upgraded and expand to KZN, where are they situated now? Because according to the statement, they already exist. Where are they now? Women own business that is to be upgraded, the committee of rail coaching that is to expand to KZN.
What's the question now?
Where are they situated, this group of women? Because according to the statement, they already exist. We don't know any problem. And
so
on the,
you can note and you come back with the responses.
Okay. On the cutting of trees, trees are just not trees. We also have medicinal trees. So I just want to know, in the process of chopping and cutting, do people have some working relationship with the environmentalists and also the Association of Traditional Healers so to make sure that you don't cut something that is, to our advantage health-wise? And I read from yesterday's newspaper how this abalone farms are making money more than a billion, about 9 billion, if I remember well, annually. And we have a statement here that you are in the process of allowing black entrepreneurs to acquire a stake in this business. What is the status quo now? It means all along they've been just workers or something else, but not maybe being accounted in the processes of transformation. I think we have long started with the transformation processes, and right now we should be talking about the people who have taken this business. It may not be equally with those who have been there before them, but I think we should be talking about something that is, that makes sense in terms of this transformation, economic transformation, the ownership of this business. And what is the time frame for us to make sure that the acquirer stays in this business? And on the funding of hospitals, just from the public sector strike, whereby we've experienced unintended consequences, especially in the health sector, due to violence. How does it impact on your funding? For them to honor the conditions of repayment. and slide 15 about actions that have been taken to increase awareness in most affected sectors. You know, when we did our oversight, we came across companies who said they didn't know about this bailout scheme and already they've returned. In as far as the marketing concerns, making them aware or your awareness campaign, what are the actual actions that they have taken to ensure that most of them, it may not be all of them, but to ensure that most of them do know about this scheme? Because already people have lost jobs, but we are not sure if indeed people do know about the scheme. Because whenever things go wrong in companies, they expect people to suffer in and then taking costs away. I'm going to give the second answer.
Thanks, Mr. Dr. Ravi, and then Ma'am Bengo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My apologies for being late. I had to attend another meeting, portfolio meeting. My questions relate to the greener, so-called green economy, and I'd like to tie up with Professor Wang. The Jew, I believe we have spent a certain amount of money in this particular project, but my concern is this really a viable project, as Professor Wang has mentioned? I mean, we've got some global automotive companies which are doing research in this particular field, and I wonder whether our country, with our scarce resources, can really compete effectively in this particular market segment. That's my concern, Madam Chair. And the second thing is, you know, on slide number 9, you talk about the biofuels, and you refer to Craddock and Hoedspruit. But Madam Chair, often, you know, South Africa has said time and again that food security is very important. I want to know from the IDC, will the so-called biofuel industry compete with our scarce resources regarding maize and even sugar and so forth? I'd just like to say, how do we retain the balance between biofuels, a viable biofuel industry in this country, and food security though? And if you look at the escalation in the prices of basic food and so forth, I think we must be very, very wary, and I think a number of players have expressed concern about that the biofuel industry should not compete with our scarce resources of basic foods. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Ariko, I think you should provide the memory so that Sandra can make copies.
Okay, I'll find it.
Thanks, Dr. Ravi.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks for the comprehensive presentation by IDC. So the number of companies supported were those companies downfall made worse by the recession, or in some there was poor planning. So how did the IDC in supporting distressed companies make a disruption in this regard? Thank you.
Thanks, Ma'am Bengo. Mr. Mabasa.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the chair, and thanks for the presentation. My first question is on slide 5. The gradual recovery during the year, especially with respect to commodities, driven mainly by China. Just a little bit of an expansion on that so that we can understand what is meant, so that we can see what the future holds relative to that statement. And also on slide 8, the green economy has been identified as a major driver for creating jobs. So my question there is that in the process of the jobs being created, do we also have a plan of ensuring that the secondary and the tertiary industry, as well as the training institutions, produce the appropriate skills and target to produce the relevant inputs, whether immediately needed or to be needed in the near future, so that we don't find that
the green economy is here, but we are still as import-oriented as historically we have been. And on slide 10, where we talk of development of funding to suppliers of rail equipment. So what I wanted to find out there is what percentage in that rail equipment is South Africa in origin compared to what is coming from outside South Africa. And that takes me to slide 12. On slide 12, IGC is committed to support the development of the motor vehicle component industry through local production. How far are we in that? I know that IGC may not necessarily be directly responsible, but with your influence, how far are we doing with the local production aspect? Because that relates to job creation. And on the same one, during the 2009-10 approvals to the value of 376 million, let me skip that. Sorry, Comrade Chair. That takes me towards the end of my questions. But my other question is, as we speak of, because IDC is such a strategic industry, do we have a way of measuring the demographic economic profile, you know, the racial one, gender, people with disability? When we take it that we are moving from 1994 up to now, because we don't only have the responsibility to grow the economy, but we also have to say, are we changing from the apartheid South Africa to the new South Africa? And on slide 39, it's almost towards the end. The 57 jobs created and sustained as compared to the aim, which was 80%. Can we account for that difference? And do we have recommendations of what should be done, so that in the next financial year, it doesn't appear that way? And I also wanted to convey a word of appreciation on the performance of the unqualified audit, because that's a huge achievement, and I hope that there are measures to sustain it so that it stays that way. And also a word of congrats on slide 36 or 38, but it's at the bottom, where the operating expenses are less than those that have been budgeted for. But the last one is on the same slide, the customer satisfaction rating, the 84, can we give more information on who participates in that, and why is it that 84 achieved instead of going higher, because we must strive to go higher all the time. Thanks, Colleague Chair, and thanks for your indulgence on taking a bit of time.
Thanks, Mr. Mabasa. Just a few, I think we will have, if we still have enough time, we'll come back with the other questions. I just want to clarify a few of the issues also. I haven't heard you speaking of any fund specifically meant for capacity building in relation to in our engagements before. You indicated that you are supporting also your other DFIs like Kula and them, and I would also expect that there are some companies, after doing your impact economic impact assessment analysis and so forth, would want to perhaps, after checking also their business plans, be able to assist them in that. So we would want to, because even during the recession, most of the issues that brought most of your companies to where they were is because of lack of management in essence, especially where those businesses we visited. Was more on the lack of management, lack of capacity in taking forward, their companies. Hence, we found them, wanting during that period. So I think the recession just added on whatever situation that they found themselves in. We've complained, previously about monitoring and evaluation of this project, because apart from capacitating them financially, I think we have also the responsibility to capacitate them with the relevant or necessary skill by skilling them or improving on their management skills. How are you intending to improve on this particular area? Moreover, that your other DFIs are also not really doing well in terms of that area, so would want you to assist. I also had a similar question from Mr. Maray around the borrowing from the UIF. But I just wanted to get the implication of your borrowing. I know your IDC muscle-wise, financially, you are good, but things sometimes don't happen the way we want them to happen. Future implications of such, if you can foresee any. Can we get cases at point in terms of the waste management or resource, what you call resource management, in terms of your green economy interventions? You're saying you've laid the foundation in that respect. The fact of the matter is our municipalities are ailing in that respect, and if we talk waste management, recycling, I think that happens at a local level, local government level. What is it that we're doing? Who are we partnering with locally? Or is it at the provincial level? Have we seen any fruit derived from that kind of an initiative? Because by now we should be seeing changes in that regard. I mean, when you look at our sewage systems also, something that we can write home about. The general waste, dumping areas and so forth, I mean, cleanliness, those things that we talked about before that we were proud of, we are really facing a challenge around them. also can you assist in giving us cases in point here? Yeah. I'm not going to repeat the questions around jobs created. I think there are many questions related to that. I think my concern around Jewel is raised also. The funding towards malaria project, how much did it cost IDC? I thought that such initiatives perhaps could be taken with the Human Science Research Council, the Science and Technology Department, of course, together with the health department, but I'm seeing you also moving towards the health sector. I'm not sure how that is going to help, especially where we have challenges. I mean, we have existing, you know, sectors that can immediately perhaps assist or intervene without any challenge. Unless you want to tell us that there are challenges in terms of those sectors coming in and assisting. Moreover, that I know World Health Organization has a lot of money that is put aside for some of this research work. Can't we then utilize that money somewhere where it's deeply needed? And then on the issue of the Africa development, I can see in terms of your report here, you have targeted to spend so much and then you overstated the amount that you had budgeted for. Well, what is the reason for that, and which project are we talking about here, development projects around Africa? Is it anything over and above the Kenya project that you told us about? If we can understand what the 2.4 billion is all about. Yeah. There's a question on your slide 17 that I have related to other services in relation to sectoral and regional funding approval. You know, when you look at other services, you'll realize that the share supersedes the share value supersedes the share of numbers, and that is termed other services. Is it possible that we get what you mean by other services here? Why is the situation as it is? I mean, if you continue funding projects that are just in numbers and they're not giving us any value for money, or am I interpreting it wrongly? I just want to know. Because if it's just a number, I don't know whether it's number of jobs or share of numbers. It's okay. But I just want to know what these other services are related to. I will come back to financials later. But I would love you to It's okay. I'll come back to financials later on. Let's hand over to you for responses. I take it that member says, Madam Miller, you don't have anything to say at the moment. You will come in the next round. Okay. Over to you, Mr. Van Wyk. I guess you're the leader of the delegation. Okay, I'll hand over to you as the leader of the delegation, and then you'll give to Eva, who's supposed to be responding.
Chair, thank you. Yeah, we've already allocated the question, so we'll start with Mr. Mia, then we'll move on.
Okay.
To start with the question about the operating environment in South Africa as a commodity versus manufacturing. In fact, that has become a challenge in the last number of years. There's a few things which are, to start with, some of the broader economic things. There are things like the currency which are having an impact. But let me talk, I mean, because that's something not really IDC can do much about that. In terms of the competitiveness and productivity, if we want to be competitive and if we want to remain competitive, we're going to need to continuously invest in best practice, and that's processes, management processes, and also in terms of equipment. There's been, especially now during the recession, companies are reluctant to invest for obvious reasons. And somewhere we're going to have to break that cycle and get people to have that confidence to put money into their business, be prepared to learn, because productivity, labor productivity and so on is not, as you say, just about cutting wages. It's about getting the most value out of people. And so that's management styles, making sure the way the operation works is optimized. We do fund businesses to improve their competitiveness, to change the equipment, not only for expansion. And I think that's going to be a process which we're going to continuously have to work on. I don't think there's any quick fix. In terms of the UIF, there were a few questions. I'll try and combine the answer to them. We started talking to UIF a while ago, and in fact we've already raised a facility from them. So it's not something that we're saying that we want to go to them and try and do. But let me start in terms of the risk. As a corporation, we provide both debt and equity, and we need to borrow money from various sources. We borrow locally and internationally. We've issued bonds in the past to be able to fund our investments. That's not a risk for us as long as we manage it appropriately, as long as we don't increase our borrowings, our leverage to an unsustainable level, and we do have sufficient room to grow our investments. If we hadn't borrowed from the UIF, we would be looking to borrow from the markets in any case. So it's not a higher risk profile. But what it does allow us to do, from the UIF point of view, they are lending to us instead of borrowing bonds and placing the money in the banks. So it benefits both them and us as state institutions to work together. The rate that we are currently paying them is lower than they might be able to get from the other markets, but they do have sufficient capacity to lend us that money, and that money is specifically targeted at investments which will create and save jobs, which will benefit the UIF in terms of their payments in the long term. There were also a few questions relating to the jewel and whether it's a good investment in the current climate and also in terms of the next stage. Where we're sitting at currently, as has correctly been stated, is at the development phase. So prototype has been produced. The manufacturing plans and the marketing plans and the business plans are still being refined. We have not made a decision yet to invest on a commercial scale. I think there are a lot of risks. I think the committee members are correct in being concerned, and we are in the process of trying to evaluate the risk, work with the company, try and identify potential partners. Try to be engaging with government as well, because one of the things which for the electric vehicle industry in particular, that in other countries there have been different forms of government support to create a local industry, and we need to explore that possibility with our South African government. So as we gather information, as more work is done in terms of the planning, we will get a better feel of the risk and the scale of the investment. Our intention is not to try and fund all of it ourselves, but we would want to work with other investors. And if it does reach a stage that we believe that it's not viable, we will step away from it. But if it seems that it is viable, then this can be a major opportunity for the country. We wouldn't like to walk away from it too early. This is something which the Department of Science and Technology has been working for a while. If we can produce a South African market, if we can get local manufacturing of these vehicles, it could form a base for the future. And that's always a challenge for IDC type investments, because we take a high risk profile, we look at new technologies, there is a lot of risk involved, but there are times when we need to take that risk, and it does pay off at times. For example, a company like Sasol, which over time has substantially paid us for the risk of the new technology. There were two questions in terms of biofuels and food security. As it currently stands, the approach is to say that we don't want to compete with food. In the current year, there has been good production of food, but that's not something that is necessarily sustainable. We know that there are various factors which impact on it. We think there is a room for food production, and when we target biofuels, we try and look at areas which are relatively underdeveloped, where the ground is underutilized. We explore alternate crops and crops which can hopefully produce a better yield in terms of biofuels, but things which will not. But we deliberately are trying not to replace maize and other food crops to make sure that South Africa can maintain its food security while we follow the biofuels approach. In terms of the motor industry and components, there were a few questions, and I'll try and combine my answer to cover the different questions. To start with, there was a question relating to the importing of raw materials, which I want to link to also to the question relating to ArcelorMittal. There is a challenge in terms of the pricing of steel in South Africa. ArcelorMittal has publicly stated that they've moved away from import parity pricing. We would like to see, as IDC, more a pricing regime which is more supportive of local downstream production, which would help develop the downstream manufacturing industry. And we think it's in South Africa's interest. We would also argue it is in ArcelorMittal's long-term interest to create a strong local industry. Unfortunately for us as a shareholder, now that's our view as IDC, but as a shareholder, we are a minority shareholder in ArcelorMittal. We've got one seat on the board. Control is sitting offshore with ArcelorMittal internationally. And while we can, as IDC, put our view on the table, enter in debates, the DTI has also engaged with this debate. At the end of the day, the ultimate decision is made by the majority investor. But it's something that we will keep knocking at the door and try and get some increasingly positive results. There was a question relating to components and how we see the potential success and what's been happening. In the last financial year that we're reporting in, the main focus on components was survival. What we're starting to see in this financial year, and we're hoping to see more of that going forward, we're starting to see, as government has announced the move from the Motor Industry Development Program to the APDP, which is more supportive of component manufacturing. We're also starting to see some of the local car manufacturers starting to re-export. There's been a slight growth in local consumption of motor vehicles, although both of these things are going to depend on what happens in the car markets internationally. But we are seeing some positive movements in terms of the motor assemblers looking at up-tooling themselves to make new models for world markets as well as local markets. Together with that, we've been working with them and with local and international component manufacturers to try and say how can we maximize the local manufacturer. And we have started, in fact, in this financial year, we have started funding. When we report the next financial year, hopefully we will have managed to fund a number of local manufacturers in that area. In terms of Kuka has not developed as it was originally envisaged. The IDC role is not directly in terms of looking at the role of IDVs and so on, but DTI is currently working together with Economic Development, I believe, doing a review of the whole situation of IDVs, the policy, what the success factors are, how we should approach it. I think it would be premature for me to try and comment on the IDZ policy or the structure as a whole. I think that's more appropriate for DTI to talk about that. But in terms of the Kuka IDZ specifically, one of the core projects was expected to be, and there IDC did play a role in terms of trying to identify, to put a core project there, and that was looking at an aluminium smelter. Unfortunately, with the electricity crisis, that's something which is no longer attractive to the country, it's no longer desirable, and that has been canned. We are, as IDC, looking at alternative investments in the region. One of the things that we did mention in the presentation was the manganese processing. So there are if the refinery comes there, it could be something which could assist. But I think there does need to be some thought given to the viability of Kuka going forward, because they do need to get critical mass to be successful as an IDZ. In terms of the distressed companies, there were a few questions relating to that as well. Firstly, the numbers of companies and the values. We supported 28 companies for about 1.4 billion rand. That saved or created about just under 8,800 direct jobs. There would have been indirect jobs as well, because those companies would have had suppliers and so on, but we don't directly measure ourselves against that, because this is more concrete. The main sectors by value, the biggest was probably the mining sector, but by numbers, the main sectors include the motor industry and fabricated metals, clothing and textiles. Another significant industry was forestry by value. I think those were some of the biggest that we put our funding into. In terms of trying to make sure that we don't support individuals or the shareholders, and we try and support the business, part of our criteria, and also want to link that to how do we make sure that the business is sustainable, we set criteria that part of amongst our criteria.
Sorry, I just want you to get back to that question on 1.4 billion. I was interested in the value add and all those interest rate issues.
In terms of the pricing, for these facilities, we price similar to the way we price the rest of IDC's facilities. And what we do is we look at the risk of the particular business, and we also look at the development impact of the particular business. So the higher the risk, the higher the price, the higher the development impact, the lower the price. So we look at both of those things, and one of the main things in looking at the development impact is the number of jobs created or saved. The In terms of the graph that you're looking at in terms of numbers and values, but I'll let Krista talk about the other services, but maybe just to explain that, that's not talking about the impact. The numbers is not talking to number of jobs, that's more talking about number of businesses. So if the value is smaller, it means we funded more small businesses. If the value is higher, it means we funded more of the larger businesses. So what we do is for the...
I want to know how many jobs we have create.
Through the 1.4.
The 1.4 billion.
Yes, that was the 8,800 jobs I mentioned.
Okay.
So those are the direct jobs that we created as late in the last financial year. We do two things when we provide the funding, or before we in fact we approve the funding. We start by setting certain conditions. In fact, a number of the funding requests that we have rejected have been for businesses where the shareholder is looking to exit the business, wants us to put money in the business which he will then take, or he wants us to buy out the shares. In terms of our rules for the scheme, we will not fund that. We want the shareholder to stay in. In fact, very often the shareholders in these distressed companies come to us and tell us they have decided to do BEE, and they want us to buy them out to provide the shares to the black workers or to. But in fact, in those companies, what we'd be doing then is making the existing shareholder rich. He walks away from a problem, and he passes the problem on to the new black shareholders. So we're very careful not to provide funding in those cases. We do set certain conditions once we... maybe I should talk first before we make the investment decision. To make sure the business is sustainable, we do a detailed due diligence. We ask the company for a turnaround plan, and we do assess that. At times we do appoint business support consultants because... some of these companies have had management challenges, and the economic recession brought those pressures of that bring it to the fore. So we do look at providing business support to those companies in terms of assisting the management going forward. And we put in place certain constraints. We put limits in terms of the drawings by the shareholders and directors. We sometimes put constraints on bonuses, so there are different mechanisms that we put in place to try and make sure that they don't pull money out of the business. There was a question relating to do we monitor that. We have been monitoring that, and the companies that we have funded have been complying with the constraints that we have put on them. In terms of the Auditor General report, the Auditor General is overall responsible for companies falling under the PFMA. We engage with the Auditor General on a regular basis, and he has indicated to us that he is happy with IDC's books and our approach, and he's happy that we use external auditors. They reserve the right to come back to us with any specific questions they have. But the Auditor General doesn't necessarily... they are overall responsible, but for certain institutions, they are happy in a sense to, if I can use the word loosely, that it gets outsourced to private audit companies to do the full audit. And the PFMA issues and so on do get looked at as part of that audit. In terms of some of the poor provinces, areas like the Free State and so on, as I mentioned in the presentation, that is a challenge. It's something that we are very conscious of. We have been, one of the things that we reported previously to this committee, in fact last year, that we were rolling out regional offices. We have rolled that out to all the provinces. We've reported on that. And through those regional offices in every province, we tried to increasingly get proactive, work more closely with the provincial government, with local entrepreneurs, trying to assist them in developing projects. One of the challenges we've got in the Free State in particular is that it is largely an agricultural province, and it's not really IDC's core focus. Having said that, we need to help them to diversify the economy, move into some of the processing of some of the agricultural products. There are certain types of manufacturing which can be done there. We need to help identify different types of value-added crops that can be used in agriculture. So it is something that we are concerned about. We note the concern. Even in the other provinces as well, where our investments are relatively low. It's something that we're sitting with a national challenge, and IDC, we have to play our part in trying to help develop those opportunities. And through our provincial offices, we try to work closely with the local entrepreneurs and local government to identify, to develop those. In some of the provinces, but that's not at a provincial level, that's more at a local government level, we have set up local development agencies, which are essentially, we help to set up agencies which are focused on economic development in because the municipality often does have the capacity to focus on some of those issues, and they have other priorities as well. And the intention is IDC will help set them up, they will leverage off local resources, and the intention is that they will ultimately fall under the local municipality's guidance and corporate governance in terms of guiding them going forward. But they will assist the local at a local government level in identifying some of these new opportunities and working with the private sector and developing them. There were two questions relating to the commodity recovery. One of the first impacts which happened as a result of the recession was there was a drop, with the possible exception of gold, but there was a drop in most resources, iron ore, aluminium, platinum, across the board. There was a reaction to the fact that manufacturing companies were in decline, and there was a feeling that and there was an oversupply of resources, and the resource prices fell substantially. What we started seeing during the course of the last financial year, as markets, as China kept growing, as partly speculators but partly investors started taking a longer term view, there was a growing confidence that there would be demand for commodities, and we started seeing a recovery in some of those commodity prices. Oil is another example of that as well. So it's very widespread. The one which has behaved quite differently is gold. But with the exception of gold, most commodities have been affected in that way. To varying extents, some have recovered more than others, but all of them have taken a knock. In terms of water management, IDC doesn't directly fund municipalities. That's more the role of the Development Bank of South Africa. So in terms of the sewage, the municipal, and so on, the municipality level projects, the DBSA would directly fund that. Having said that, we have recognized that water is going to be a national crisis, and we are exploring ways that we could and should be involved through working with the private sector. So we are looking at things like water purification technologies. In addition, one of the things which we are working very closely with the company on is developing a project for mine water recycling. We've also funded a company to recycle its waste mine water. You may or may not be aware of it, but that's one of the major challenges in the mining areas, where there's a lot of water which is wasted out of the mining process. But a lot of that is contaminated water as well. And we're starting to see that get into our water systems. We're starting to see the water tables rising. It's increasingly becoming a challenge. So we are working with the private sector to try and identify projects to recycle that and also possibly clean that to a level where it can then be reused with the mine, or in some cases even feed back into our drinking water systems. In terms of the rail business, the one that that we said is moving into a new location, they are operating in the Western Cape. They will continue to operate in the Western Cape, but it will be an expansion into KwaZulu-Natal, where they will set up a totally new operation to support that market. In terms of the trees and the harvesting and so on, the businesses that we support operate on a renewable basis, so it is environmentally friendly. The type of trees, they tend to be pine and eucalyptus, so some of the indigenous trees which are needed for different purposes, for medicinal purposes and so on. We try and encourage the businesses we fund to be Forestry Services Council certified. That's an international certification which says that they are doing their planting and harvesting on a sustainable basis and are following best forestry stewardship practices. In terms of abalone, what was mentioned in this presentation, in fact, was one example of one abalone company. There are a number of abalone companies in the country. We have funded others as well. Some are empowered and some aren't. This particular one wasn't empowered, and the role that we played, there was an opportunity, they required additional funds to expand, and there was also an opportunity to bring in new entrepreneurs, so we served a dual purpose, and this company has now been empowered, and we provided funding for them to expand. In terms of the IDC funding in general, the majority of our funding is going into companies that have black shareholding. In terms of the hospital strike and the impact on our funding?
Just on that abalone, because the complaint before used to be that the area, I mean the farming, abalone farming was not transformed in general. Can you just elaborate on that so that members can also be covered on that? Is it something that you looked at as the conditionality or something else?
We haven't necessarily looked at the abalone industry as a whole because we are dependent on particular companies who require finance. So we can only influence the ones who require finance for expansion. And what we've tried to do in the ones we fund, where there hasn't been a black entrepreneur involved, we've tried to encourage the business to bring either the workers in the company or the local communities. So we've provided funding in many cases for part of the funding to go into the business as equity, but to be channeled through the workers or the local communities to try and change that profile that you're talking about. In terms of hospitals and the hospital strike, what we saw during the strike was that there was an increased reliance on the private sector hospitals. Since we are funding the hospitals that we are funding are in the private sector, it in fact hasn't necessarily had a negative impact on them. So their sustainability hasn't been put on threat in terms and their ability to pay. But one of the things which it's made clear is that the type of role that we have played in terms of supporting some of these businesses, especially the ones which are targeting the people of the relatively low income, is probably something that needs to be developed further, because we need to make sure that we are supporting the private sector to complement the public sector to meet the demand in the country. And that need is going to continue to grow as the medical insurance, national health insurance gets rolled out. In terms of actions to increase awareness on the recession, we approached that on two or three different fronts. We've had a media campaign where we've released a press statement, but we've also had a number of media interviews with both with television, radio, as well as print media. In addition, we've started a process of targeted workshops. We've held over 20 of them so far with different sectors. We've worked together with the industry associations and the trade unions in terms of asking them to identify people to invite to those workshops. We've made presentations to them and obviously taken questions and explained the process. We've also got information on people who have applied for the training layoff scheme, and we're reviewing that to see if some of those companies are potentially companies that haven't applied to us that maybe we can support in terms of our funding. In terms of the green economy as a driver to jobs, and the secondary and tertiary and some of the skills issues, a lot of our focus is in fact on trying to develop a secondary and tertiary industry to build the value chain, because that's where the jobs will be created. But also, if we want to get to the stage where we are world leaders, or at the very least, keeping pace with the rest of the world, where we are not dependent on others, we need to make sure that we develop the capacities as much as possible locally. And let me give an example here, and that's on the solar water heaters. There's a plan to roll out substantially solar water heaters in South Africa. So what we are doing is engaging with companies, and in fact we have started funding some companies in terms of manufacturing solar water heaters locally. One of the challenges is skills, and in particular looking at the skills, if we're going to do it on the scale that we are planning as a country to roll them out, we need to make sure we've got the manufacturing skills but also the skills to be able to install the solar water heaters. Now, while it doesn't fall directly under IDC scope, it's something we've got a direct interest in. So we are engaging when we work on a project, we try and encourage a training element to it. We're also engaging with other institutions and government in other forms to try and ensure that we work in a coordinated basis so that the skills development does happen. In terms of the rail equipment, some of the lighter work, some of the refurbishment upgrades, some of that happens locally. When you start talking about the major tenders in terms of which require more capital intensive equipment, unfortunately over the last few years the bulk of that seems to have been coming from offshore companies rather than local companies. And that's something that we're going to have to change. Transnet is aware of this, and it is something that they have been looking at in terms of their procurement policies. Department of Public Enterprises is very aware of it, and they are looking at strategies in terms of trying to change the approach to make sure that as much as possible is procured locally. On our side, we are engaging with both DPE and Transnet, as well as local manufacturers of capital equipment, to try and see that we can support the local manufacturers so that they can sufficiently invest to be able to meet the size of those tenders. What it does require is that companies like Transnet then need to give some sort of security of orders. They need to be able to place the orders locally and give indications of the volumes they will be buying and over what period. Because it's very difficult for a local company to bid for a once-off tender, invest in capital equipment, and then if the next tender goes to a foreign country the next year, then all of that investment is lost, IDC money is lost as well. And that's the challenge where there is engagement we are having with Transnet. In terms of the demographic profile, women with disability and so disabilities and so on, in terms of the general stats, I mean, stats, South Africa does keep certain stats in terms of that, and I'm not going to comment too much on that, except to say that while there are changes that are apparent in the country, they haven't, I don't believe they've gone as far as they need to go if we're going to be the type of country that we want to be, that creates sort of opportunities for everyone. If you talk from the point of view of IDC funding and our businesses specifically, there we have seen a significant shift to the extent, as I mentioned, the majority of the businesses we funded is at least 25% black shareholding. We've been funding an increasing number of women-owned businesses. We're starting to see more black and women entrepreneurs coming into businesses. We haven't reached a stage that it is proportional to our demographics of the country, and I think that's a challenge which we're going to have to keep working with over time. An area where we are performing poorly, I believe, is in terms of disabilities. There are very few of the investments that we have made have been to companies owned by disabled people. We have supported a few investments, for example, by blind people. We have supported investments by where there have been trusts shareholding by disabled people. So through those ways, we have tried to encourage it. But it's something which we need to do a lot more work and try and, because the real challenge for us as a country and for us as IDC is not only to get disabled people to get a shareholding in these businesses. We need to create black entrepreneurs. And we need to make sure that we are developing them with the right skills, that they are given the right opportunities, and then that leads into us funding them for the right opportunities. And there, I think, is our biggest area of weakness in terms of where we have funded, in terms of our demographics. In terms of the audit and unqualified, firstly, I want to just acknowledge the compliment, but it is something that we do pay a lot of attention to. I mean, during Mr. Van Beek's presentation, he spoke about our internal audit. We've also got a strong financial management department. We work closely with our auditors. We try to make sure that we are following best practice in terms of the international finance reporting system. It's something that we will continue to endeavor to keep our eye on the ball and make sure that we continue to receive unqualified audits. In terms of the malaria, I'm almost finished and I'm going to hand on to my colleagues just now, but in terms of malaria, we have not, maybe just to clarify, we did not provide funding to the World Health Organization or to other institutions. What we are looking at, and this is very similar to the comment I made earlier about the DBSA, their core focus is funding municipalities. We are very conscious of the fact that we are not the health department. But our role is industrial development, and we would work closely with the health department, with science and technology, with whatever other institutions are there, to try and make sure that industrial development is supporting their objectives. So we would look at things like manufacturing of vaccinations, manufacturing of pharmaceuticals, production of medical equipment, ways to treat chemicals to treat to prevent the spread of malaria from mosquitoes and so on. So it's very much a cooperative approach. We are not going to be, we are not at all trying to become, to compete with the Department of Health. We are trying to build industrial capacity to be able to support the national objectives in terms of health. Thank you.
Chiao, there's a few outstanding answers, which I'll ask the Labour to deal with the two specific to Africa
investments and then the other services, and then Krista will deal with the fourth other questions.
Okay. I think the malaria question is not understood. You're saying you are participating in that, but you're saying at the same time you are assisting in other innovations, or you're supporting the industry. I mean, according to what you've written here, you're saying you're participating together with the World Health Organization and the Department of Health to investigate innovative solutions. You see, it's not about financing of, you know, vaccination and all that. And that is something that I don't think would have a question if it was related to that.
Maybe just to clarify, when we talk about innovative solutions, because the second part of that is an identifying industrial development opportunities. So it's trying to see what are the, working with them to identify where the gaps are, where the challenges are, and out of that, to our focus would be in terms of things like the vaccinations, things like.
And what would be the cost implication of the work that you're doing with them?
The main cost implication at this stage is our resources. So we are engaging.
The internal resources.
It's internal resources.
Mr. Van Say, do you make comment? Oh, Mr. Van Say? Oh, my name. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. A question was raised regarding why IDC has exceeded its target in terms of financing elsewhere in Africa. What we've noticed is that there was an increase of demand for IDC, especially for funding from the IDC. And with this, you know, this target being exceeded, I think it was due to a number of projects which required huge capital investment. For example, we had the cement plant in Namibia that IDC had to fund, and the sugar plantation in Tanzania. And the other question was also raised in terms of other services, in terms of what are the specific sectors that you that are covered in the other sectors category. What we've done is it's actually a combination of sectors such as the information technology, media and motion pictures, and healthcare services. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Madam. Thanks, Mr. Hansen.
I'll cover the questions related to jobs and how we share the jobs and it was mentioned that the President mentioned a figure of 500,000 jobs that would be created in the previous year. IDC had a target of 38,000, which was just below 8% of that figure. I think it's also important that we mention that even the President has acknowledged that 500,000 is not decent jobs. When the IDC report that we will, or our investments will create 19,000 jobs, what we mean with that 19,000 is full-time equivalent jobs. So a temporary job for 3 months, we would not count as a full job. So that 19,000 is maybe not, is a bit understated. The plans to improve contribution to job creation, and I think this is not necessarily an IDC plan, but this is a plan for the whole country. The whole Industrial Policy Action Plan is built around the premise that it will provide the solutions for the unemployment in the country. And that is the big reason why the IDC is supporting IPAP. So all of the plans, all of our strategies that we presented the previous round that we, previous presentation or engagement that we had with the committee, talks about our role in supporting IPAP, which sectors we will be supporting, where we will be making a difference. I think a big change to the way the IC operated is a lot more emphasis on proactiveness in terms of projects that we identify and develop. And that's where we will increase our impact on that. In the long run, the IDC sees that its role will maybe be as to act as a catalyst for this industries. You might not have the direct impact, but as these industries develop and the smaller companies support or supply to the larger industries or the larger companies, you'll address unemployment issues. The issue on the actual jobs created versus the budgeted, I think that to a large extent, as with a lot of the other targets and indicators, was a function of the economic conditions. In previous years, we have been able to achieve that target. We never had any problems with that. Last year was a very difficult year for a lot of companies that IDC approved money for. So I spoke about the delays in implementation. And I think as economic conditions improve, we will see those expansion plans coming to full fruition and that should be addressed. Customer satisfaction index, that is an annual survey that we, get a company to survey our clients. They've got a set of questions that they ask for the client. It covers all aspects of IDC's operations, from the first point of contact to the process of us visiting the client, the assistance that we give them, the post-investment monitoring. It covers the whole range of IDC interactions with the client, which we measure how well we are doing or not. There's been a slight decline in the responses, in the satisfaction index compared to the previous year. If you consider, we don't have the figures in the report, but over the past 4 or 5 years, that index has really improved significantly. And the slight drop that we're seeing in the last year is not necessarily cause for concern, but something that we are addressing this year, and it's also part of our performance indicators for the current year, is to try and improve our turnaround times. That is something that we constantly getting feedback on, that we need to be faster, fast responses. So that is something that we are addressing, and we're looking at our operations to see where we can improve to increase our turnaround times and increase customer satisfaction again.
Jay, if you just allow me to pick up on the last three. There was a specific question on the staff costs. Why is it down from previous years? It's just a reflection on the performance of the IDC, the impact we make 2010 versus 2009, whether it's the jobs or financial. So the incentive scheme or the bonus we declare to staff is much, much lower than previous year. That brings the staff costs down. There was a question on other DFIs. What are we doing with our sisters and brothers? We have now signed MOUs with probably the most DFIs, not only in South Africa but also in Southern Africa, specifically referring to capacity building initiatives. We've sent people, we've seconded people to the Land Bank, CEDA, National Endowment Fund, Eastern Cape Development Corporation, ITALA. We have people working there almost on a permanent basis, assisting ITALA on their risk management processes, and also KULA. And then also, Chair, under the capacity building, we're also providing credit lines where necessary at a quite low interest rate to assist these DFIs to on-lend to their clients. Chair, there was a question specifically on business support. When a company comes in, we write up lessons learned on each failure the IDC is going through, and it's 100% correct that the member said. The biggest lesson we keep on learning is not the money, it's not the cost of the funding, it's not the technology, it's not the market, it is management. It's the upskilling of management. So we have a system in IDC now. You'll apply for money, and if we realize that there's a need for improvement in management skills, we provide you with a grant. So 50% of the grant we give to you to make sure that we upskill upskill the people in managing the business. So we have a well written up portal, electronic portal. So if there's an application in the IT industry, you go into the portal and you check, before I write this transaction, what were the main lessons learned in the IT, typical failures in the past, and then we address that. But management keeps on coming through as the main.
And what would be your minimum cost towards that? Your minimum cost towards that?
Minimum amount we would provide. It's the minimum amount we would provide is, well, there isn't really a minimum, but the smaller ones tend to be about 10,000 rand that we'd get as a grant, and we can provide another 10,000 rand then as a loan together with that. But then and that would normally be to assist someone with a business plan. But if it's something more complicated, then the amount does go up from that.
Does it depend on the type of company, or the size of a company?
Yes, it's very much case by case. It depends on the type and size of company. It also depends on what their needs are, or how complicated their needs are, and what type of consultants they might need to assist.
Okay.
Just the last one, there was also a question specifically on the, what do we do to ensure that owners don't get all the benefits of IDC? Quite a lot of mechanisms in place. When we approve, the first one we must go through is we call it your drawdown conditions. So there we check you first. You must meet some conditions, whether it's for management. Then there's some milestone projects throughout the rollout of the projects. We will not allow you to draw money if you don't meet some conditions. But then thirdly, most important, is the so-called covenants we have in our agreement. So during the life of the investment or IDC's money in the business, a certain percentage can only go to salaries or where specifically management salaries. So we do monitor it, and the shareholders are not supposed to, when my money comes in, they take my money and they walk out. They can't. We also limit withdrawing of shareholders' funds from the business. Ciao.
But then what would be the cost of your impairment, the cost?
So the reasons.
Yeah.
Main reasons of IDC is a business failure. So we will only provide if the probability of recovery is low. The payments doesn't mean we have written it off. We only follow the IFRS provisions or policy on provisions. So if we view the probability as low, or this company is really going through a very tough time, we will provide for that period.
I'm asking after you've just given us that, the information prior to that, because if really you are that tight, then what would bring a business to that state?
Well, a lot of the companies that we fund are very high-risk businesses. So we fund businesses, a large proportion are startups, companies which are expanding fast.
Mm-hmm.
About two-thirds of the companies we fund are small and medium enterprises. Now, all of those businesses, in particular if you take a startup, there is a very high risk profile. And in some cases, it's also businesses that have new technology. But because we're taking that amount of risk, there is a higher chance that businesses will fail. Some of the businesses, even if they don't fail, they go through a difficult period. And in terms of the accounting standards, we need to make a provision in case they fail or in case they can't repay all of our money. The other reason for provisions is that where we've got equity in a company and the value of the equity drops below the amount we paid for it, and that in the last year would have been happening a lot, because as the stock market moved, even for unlisted or smaller companies, the valuation, the way it gets valuated is linked to what happens in the stock market. But as the valuation changes, if it drops below the amount that we invested, then we have to impair that. If it rises again, then we reverse that impairment.
Okay. I guess members have also the follow-up questions. I'm looking at my time now. We we actually are left in terms of what we have budgeted for. We left with a few minutes. Then members will have to decide whether we extend the time allocated since
we, apart from the meeting at 249, at 2, we don't have a business for the committee. If we can extend to 1 o'clock, members are okay. So that's because this, we're dealing with an institution that has an income of.
Just two of my questions that I feel have not properly been answered.
Yes, I know that. That's why I want to clarify the issue I'm raising. What's your income, your operating budget? You know, it's quite interesting. You know, it's not in your immediate. I don't understand why. So, 7.7? Yes, so we can't deal with that within 2.5 hours. It's just ambitious of us, you know. But I'll give members that opportunity. I know members, there are members who want to leave before us, but so can I give members an opportunity to make follow-up? I'll start with Mr. Marae because you want to leave. You will be followed by Mr. Wang. Will be followed by Mr. Mabasa, Mr. Sotesi, Mr. Ngonyama, and Mr. Maramela.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I promise you I will not, although I've listed some extra questions, I will not ask them. Just on the questions that I've posed, there's some of them that has not, I feel has not been properly responded to. First of all, it seems like it's very easy to increase the productivity, become competitive. I thought it was much more difficult. Secondly, just on the local components, you talked about ArcelorMittal, but I haven't heard a strategy of yours of how you're going to support increasing the real local content, because you've heard what I've said. What component manufacturers reckon is local content, which is not downstream beneficiation. And if I understand it correctly, the objective is downstream beneficiation. Now, if someone imports plastic pebbles from abroad to put into a molding machine and support that to Volkswagen in South Africa, then it's 100% local content, where there's been zero downstream beneficiation. Now, everybody's very proud to say 100% local content. In fact, very little of that is understood as local content. Now, if the objective is to support component manufacturers, then surely you must have a strategy on how to make sure that your money is properly being utilized for that downstream beneficiation.
Okay.
So I haven't heard anything that you've responded to that. Just on the ArcelorMittal thing that you have mentioned, ArcelorMittal has confirmed that they don't produce, for instance, flat sheet metal for bodies of vehicles. They don't manufacture that. So that is all, for instance, being imported. The other thing is just on the green industry. I've mentioned what the Minister of Agriculture has said publicly. Now, if there's a change in policy, will you have a change in policy in terms of funding for biofuel manufacturing from certain maize cultivars as well? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Depending, of course, on the... I think we overproduced, but for how long will that production, you know, stay? Going forward, whether we'd want to venture into such... I think it's important that you answer that one because the situation now might not be the situation in future. Babu Wang.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding for the Auditor General report, I'm still not sure for the your answer is quite clear, because you are the government entity, also very big at this for the order with financial amount. So, but I think depending to the your answer say is AG say not necessary if you have the, your independent the auditor committee or anything. I just hear for you reply. But I want to confirm for the government. From the IDC, you since IDC's beginning, you never get the need for the AG report, annual report. So this one I want to confirm. Is it only this year or the period that you haven't got the AG report yet? Then from the, your annual report, there is a page 148. Your annual report, the page 148. I just want to see the inside your performance is a bonus. From the this executive member, is a bonus, and come to the second paragraph is the MA Peter. This bonus is get the 1.6 million is over the all the board member. I don't know why he get this big bonus. How you can get this bonus for the calculate? I want to I just like to know is the what position for this MA Peter? Because all of them
pizza.
Peter, yeah. So I just want to see this big amount of how he can get this bonus. Yeah. And regarding for the green economy, because from your report, this report inside, you already approved this project. This is a solar project, but including the project ABC, and the wind and the waste energy. But I see the from the your annual report inside, this one for the this feasibility study, you spend 54 million for the only this one for the feasibility study. I want to know why, because you already approved this project. If this project approved by the someone is coming to apply the funding from IDC, why you need to pay the feasibility study funding, this big amount of 54 million. Then I think it's your answer for the jury. This marketing issue I'm not here. I just go collect some this district funding. This information that we'll be asking to you now. I think my colleague Marais said this car will be selling about 300,000 in the market. I don't know if because he said to me, so you answer this question. If this car in future want to sell in the 300,000 range in the market, at the moment from the overseas, China, Japan, they have the beautiful electrical car. You see the jewelry. If you see the jewelry design, is our design. This car is our design. This design I can see this design if compared with the overseas this car design. I can show you for the car design. This car was selling the 350,000 range because he announced in the newspaper. In the 2013, they want to sell this car in 350,000. I don't know who can buy this car because overseas coming under the 200,000 range. So I see the IDC spend a lot of money investment for this electrical car. You injection because they still need 1 billion rand for injection for start of normal production. So this is my concern. And from the chairperson.
Just while we are there, I think we were also concerned about how much has the IDC so far contributed.
Yeah,
it was not clear.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, chairperson. I think my last question, because we haven't got a lot of time. I'm very concerned for the IDC distribute this funding. Depending to the this one for the last presentation for quarter one, quarter two, this presentation show to us. For IDC district funding, utilized 4.1 billion already in the quarter one, quarter two. Then I think you just report and answer the question. Say 1.4 billion is job create and the set is 8,800, like you say to us because the chairperson highlight and the cost. This is you say is about 28 company be set. For this district. If from this report, this cost per job is 159,000 rand of the job cost. But if from this report, the quarter one and quarter two, 2010 and 2011, this 1.2 billion rand is the cost per job, because he only remained and created, set the job, is 3,700 jobs. Then only for the company, 12 companies. So per job, cost per job is 340,000 rand. If from this, because the report comes from the department.
Yeah, that's the department.
My question is, the IDC is the district funding spend to the order district company. This 340,000 rand of just keep the one job, or what it means? I want to know, because this one.
Doctor Huang, we are discussing the 2009 financial year report. That is the 2010-11 first and second quarter report.
Yes, the chairman, I also took
it. I think
to
it's
the,
in
to,
addition
yes,
to.
1.4 billion, I also took it. Now, it's talking about.
Yes, I agree. I agree, but I just don't want us to
confuse
the truth.
So, if people are only talking 1.4 billion, this 8,800 jobs, this cost one job is 159,000. So, I want to know how you can spend this money for only per job, cost per job, and the only saving for the 628 companies.
Thanks, Dr.
Thanks, Convention. My opinion is that with the June, informed by the cost benefits, you know, that comparison, we must be determined to go ahead with it. Because if we don't get determined and committed, we're setting ourselves for failure. So somewhere we just have to say we're going for it, because even if it is slightly more expensive than the cars we should be importing, but there is still an advantage in that. It's just that it must be reasonable. And the economic profile of beneficiaries, the question that I asked at first, which included women, people with disabilities, and then, you know, black, Indian, colored, white. I request that still be sent to us in a written form, and that it gets monitored as a critical component as people borrow money, because it is in the interest of us as government that we improve, keep on improving on that. And the industrial parks, I asked this question before and said, when we save companies, we must be careful not to find ourselves only saving those that are so advanced that it's easy for them to communicate. So places like the industrial parks, because I will give an example and say Orlando Industrial Park. Do you have a way of relating to such places? Because if you relate to such places, you are going to find most of them also answer the question of the demographics, so that they assist in, as you help them, you are also answering the problem of demographics. Then, what are we importing which we can manufacture? So it means that somewhere we must be able to identify these categories. I want to give an example here and say hospital bedding. With assuming that we are importing that, that will be unnecessary. The last one is broadening participants in the economy remains our objective, so that, you know, that we don't find that we only help those that are already rich to get richer. It benefits us more if we pull the poorest up the ladder. And if we get committed to helping in areas like cooperatives, where people come together and you even guide them to start a business that they think they can have an interest in, that is also going to contribute in that in meeting that challenge. And thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Alexander, for taking.
Thank you, sir. Green transformation is a very thorny issue. That's to the urban industry. In our previous interaction with the IDC, we were told that one of the conditions for funding is for the company to adhere or commit itself to transformation policy. But in this case of urban business, I think we see the opposite. And today, some are owned by BLEC, that is around the lens of BEE. Is not enough. I think we have to get a breakdown in terms of race and gender and also the whole issues of employment equity for us to ensure that the risk progress when we do our oversight. And we must also have a target and a time frame to narrow the gap of inequality. And on the $2 billion that is set aside by IDC and the UAF, in a flat first stage, the companies are reluctant to accept this fund. And one would assume the reluctance could be due to the uncertainty of the discounted rate. But, I mean, in the light of this assumption, can IDC explain or maybe share with us what way to ease the burden of the increase to ensure or to encourage companies to accept this fund? Because they are afraid to commit themselves to the debt by the risk fund. The $2 billion by UAF and IDC. And slide four again, the last bullet on a new developmental growth path. The last bullet, can I get clarity? It says to assist in removing barriers to the implementation of specific projects, and it makes an example of PSMA. How does the PSMA become a barrier? And the last one would be on the World Cup expenditure, that we have family members of officials, and can you get elaboration as to what you actually mean by family members of officials? Is that their spouse and children, and how many children? Because with us, you know, we have a family families as part of the family. And also, officials at what level, those who have benefited from the tickets on the World Cup exchange.
Thank you, Anon Protector, Mr. Mwenyu.
Madam Chair, the EPAP, it's a very important point which has been made about realignment with EPAP objectives. I hope that we will be in a position for future references, especially on this point, that this objective is broken down in so far as the growth, the jobs created, and the manufacturing in particular, as it relates to EPAP for future purposes. It's very, very important. Because when we talk about realignment with EPAP, we're talking about sustainability of jobs created and also creation or contribution to growing economy. And as well as manufacturing. Maybe that's just flagging that issue as an important element of the objective here. The second one is the question of slide 16. On the question of summary of funding approvals, application of funding, ownership percentage, which is 3%, I want to argue that there is a very, very important need to
to increase that percentage of ownership. Because it relates to transformation. If we talk about, and I imagine that ownership is ownership to traditionally disadvantaged communities of South Africa. It's 3% here, the contribution. It needs to be upped. Especially as it relates, Madam Chair, to... You know, I must say that the African startups and expansions of 51%, it's something that we can celebrate in terms of the spread here. But I concur with the IGC that expansions in the rest of Africa of 27% vis-a-vis and the ownership inside South Africa, it's a bit lopsided. In my view, we've gone for an overkill in our expansion in Africa. It's definitely an overkill. We have to reduce a bit if there was a way and of doing so as soon as possible so that we increase the ownership. Because we have to deal with the challenges that are facing the people in South Africa. The issue of integration is very, very crucial. Yes, we do understand for sustainability of IDC, they will be attracted to go for projects that are sustainable in the continent, that are quite attractive. But it does not solve the problem of South Africa, of growth in the country, as well as participation by the traditional disadvantaged people. That's my take to it. And on that 3%, perhaps if it was possible for us, that 3% be broken down on ownership, in which sectors, and are we referring to 3%? The other one, Madam Chair, is the auto manufacturing component and the role of ArcelorMittal. It will remain a thorny issue insofar as growth is concerned, because if you talk about manufacturing and for sustainable growth, we're talking steel. I do understand the point that is made by IDC that they are a minority shareholder within ArcelorMittal. But I think any company which invests in South Africa somehow has to contribute to the objectives of the country. And an organization or institution like IDC has also a responsibility to somehow use its influence, even with those shareholders that are abroad. They are better placed to negotiate. Definitely, I do understand the point that is made, but IDC is not a passive shareholder. It's not a passive shareholder. It is an active shareholder, and which has to influence the reduction of this price of steel. And I want to get a sense of total commitment by IDC Chair in ensuring that this aspect is dealt with. The last one is I don't get on the whole presentation. I agree, and they were excited about everything, but in my view, Madam Chair, IDC is the biggest institution and FDI in South Africa. And therefore, its cross-pollination or its relations with smaller FDIs like Kula, Samaf, and so on, coordination and mentoring and kind of giving support to them and because the objective is one, and they are somehow a big brother in my view. And listening to everything, I don't find any overall the bigger picture of IDC, and insofar as working and kind of and pulling closer and assisting these smaller FDIs. And perhaps the last one is on intellectual property. countries like India on drugs, for instance. Countries like India on drugs. Countries like China on textiles. Countries like Taiwan on solar systems, for instance. And perhaps electronic industry. Did not come because the people of those countries are very, very creative. South Africa is not, yes, it may be, but South Africa is number one in the country, in the continent, in so far as and as scientific discoveries and intellectual property. It is number one in the continent, followed by Egypt. I am not getting any sense, and therefore those countries, what they did was to have some relations and buy some of these licenses from countries like U.S. India, for instance, bought the licenses insofar as the drug manufacturing had licenses from U.S. And therefore there was technology transfer to India. And India started to produce these drugs in India. And now they are said to be produced from India. Same thing with China on textile. Same thing with Taiwan. I am not sure if there's a strategy overall by and IDC which actually takes us in that direction around the question of intellectual property. It's very, very silent on that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Gonyama. You're fine. I get a sense that we're not done. I just want IDC to explain to us what's your actual collective or comprehensive income. You spoke of 7.78 billion. I want to know what exactly it is, because we need to know what we're talking to here. Just by confirming what you're saying. I just want to understand whether IDC is supporting government or is implementing government policies. Who is who here? I just want to find out, because you know, the impression I'm getting is like IDC, yes, we're going to be supporting IPEP, maybe growth part, and you know, it's like you don't take cue from government. And in my understanding is that in whatever we are doing, we must make sure that you follow what the government is saying. We have 12 commitments of the government, and I think commitment number 4 is what you should be wholeheartedly supporting as an industrial arm. I think that is what we should. And the impression I also got when we were presenting your strategic plan was that you are following on that. But what you are saying today in responses is like, no, it's a by the way thing. I'm worried about that, because our main focus is on alleviating poverty, on creating jobs, decent jobs. That's what we're focusing on, and other priorities. So I think this particular committee must ensure that we achieve this. And I think this is the spirit of IPEP too. This is the spirit of the new growth path as it is being developed. So, and I want us to deal with that. I also want to get an impression, also be assisted in terms of also getting an impression that IDC talk of regional integration is not at the expense of local, development, economic development. That's what I really want to get. But further, I want to check on page 131. IDC is talking about interest rate ranging from 5% to 20%. At what stage is the prime rate effective? And what exactly JIBA or prime rate? What signifies the high interest rate as mentioned here? And what kind of loans have this much interest rate? Because I take it that it's not every loan. I think this question was asked even in our previous interaction. We understand we want to make profit, but this is the government creation with a particular purpose, and I just want to check the discrepancies there of what is the reason for that. And to further amplify concerns around the jobs created versus jobs saved. What is the rate of jobs saved compared to jobs created? Just in a nutshell, so that we can get a clear picture of what you were saying here. If, for instance, in terms of jobs created, how sustainable are those jobs that have been created? For some way you're talking of jobs that have been saved, some way you talk of jobs that have been created, 19,000 jobs, which is a commitment, you're saying it was a commitment from ITC, also the president alluded to that, to the 19,000. Share that IDC was supposed to contribute towards 500,000 jobs. And Mr. Ngonyama says you had committed to 38,000 jobs. I want to agree also, I think it's mental case that, you know, it's of no use. It doesn't make economic sense to bail out, and this is what we've been saying, to bail out companies in distress that create temporary jobs. Because what we want is permanent, decent jobs. And of course, some of those companies or temporary jobs have nothing, you know, or have just little contribution towards the productivity. These are issues that I want you to deal with, because I think you have a very, very important lever towards making us realize our goals in South Africa. I've earlier on indicated that we would need a follow-up meeting, because I don't believe that we could really deal with a 7 billion company in 2.5 hours. We need to have a follow-up meeting with you. And I would like to ask Ariko to, because right now we are rushing issues and we are not really doing justice to this issue. I would like to ask Ariko to make a follow-up meeting wherein we're going to re-engage on some of the issues. Because looking at your financial statements, it's quite huge. I think it needs to have a dialogue.
and your strategic issues also, they also need ample time. So if we can spend another half a day on these matters, I think members will agree with me that we would have given justice to IDC work. Because our role is also to help you do your job better. As much as we need information to empower ourselves for the purposes of giving this information to our constituencies, but we also have a responsibility to ensure that whatever you are doing is accounted for. No, it cannot be. Thank you very much. We do not have time because members must go on lunch, and after lunch we have to attend to the 2 o'clock meeting. I don't know how members will feel about my suggestion that you take this question, you process them, perhaps it will give more clarity to them in the next meeting, while members will also go back and re-look at whatever that you've given us. And as we meet, perhaps things will be much clearer. So that we can then give you time to respond to just say a few words before we close the meeting. I take it members agree with me?
Yes, I agree.
Okay, thank you very much.
We are agreeing, madam, and I just want to say that I hope one of the questions is that lowering of cost of funding.
Yes.
And I hope that's part and parcel of the question.
Okay. If they do not have they should now put it. Can we take this opportunity then to, after that agreement, to thank you very much really for this interaction, and hoping that in the next meeting would really clarify further some of the issues. Thank the members also for their attendance, and members, I think there's one issue that before you leave, I want us to clear on. Otherwise, thank you also to the IDC, really, for the work well done. I think you continue to do your work. We understand it's not an easy one. It's that of making the country look better. Otherwise, thank you very much. We can hear last word from Mr. Van Wyk for today.
Yeah, actually, thank you very much. It's always good to come here and to report on our performance. It's clear, I think we need to clarify a few of these issues. I mean, 2.5 hours is not enough. But what is also good, the CEO will be with us when we come back next time. So,
okay.
So we can. No, thank you for that.
Thank you very much. You may excuse us, and I just want to find out from members, because tomorrow afternoon we don't have anything, and as well as you'll assist us here. I thought perhaps you should take ITEC from Friday to tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
How many members will be available for tomorrow afternoon? Can I check with you tomorrow afternoon instead of Friday morning? We shift Friday morning meeting to tomorrow afternoon. Or we'll all be there. Thank you. Thank you very much. So can you assist us in facilitating that, please? Okay. And then Ariko will then confirm with SMS to all members tomorrow afternoon. Yeah. Thank you very much for making sense of the
Let's start to make this copy. I can tell you this copy not from IDC, not from you.
It's from him.
No, IDC must submit
it like this. But you said you didn't.
No.
Which one you said?
Ariko.
But you said you
didn't. No, this is not for me. No. This one must be submitted by the IDC. The presentation, not you. They must copy for us. I say.
No, they sent electronic.
You request. I want all the